today's episode of Higher Learning, we're joined all the way from Dubai with Chris Ball, the managing partner and founder of Hoxton Capital Management. Chris has so many great insights from moving to the Middle East and what it did for his career, a little bit about his entrepreneurial journey, and what he does to create a unique candidate experience during interviews. Chris has so many great insights, and it's a really cool listen. I think you're really gonna enjoy this one. I cannot wait for you to hear. Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. I am joined today by a very special guest out in Dubai. I'm joined by Chris Ball. He's the managing partner and founder at Hoxton Capital Management. Chris, how you doing today?
I'm very good, thanks, Oz. And yourself?
I'm doing awesome. I'm really appreciative of you coming on. You have a really exciting story that I can't wait to dive into. A lot going on here. So let's kick it off right here. You are an entrepreneur. You opened up, obviously, your own capital management organization. You started Hoxton 6 years ago. I'm just interested, what spurred this decision and what was kind of your vision? Because it's not exactly a normal thing to kind of start your own capital management fund. So I'm just interested to hear how you got going on this journey and what kind of spurred you to action on this.
Yeah, so I've always wanted to run my own business. It's always been something I've been really interested in. So for me, it was all about working for myself, really, which is what I wanted to do. So we started the business in 2018. We started with £30 million, lost that in dollars, just 37 and a half, something like that, dollars. And we're just over $2 billion today.
Wow.
In exits that we manage for our clients, which is cool. And we didn't start off with thinking that. If you'd have said that 6 years ago, I'd have probably said you're having a laugh. But it's been a great journey so far. I'm super lucky with the people that we've managed to get on board, utilizing our business to make it what it is today.
All right, so there's a couple of things I want to dive into here because I'm not sure everybody knows how this works. So first thing I'll ask you is, you mentioned that you wanted to work for yourself. Is that because you had bad managers in the past? Is that you just wanted to do things your own way? Like, what kind of drove that knowledge of, like, I want to be doing my own thing and building my own thing?
Yeah, I think it's always been in me to want to do it. Does that make sense? You know, I've typically had really good managers and really good experiences. I didn't have, a real negative experience previously that drove me to try and start my own business. If anything, I learned a lot off the people that I worked for that enabled me to start my own business. But I've always been quite entrepreneurial. I've always wanted to do it myself. I was lucky enough to take the plunge and it succeed, because obviously a lot of people aren't as lucky. So, it's been good. But I think, kind of when I was growing up, when I was younger, a few of my friends' parents were entrepreneurs or had their own businesses. And I always thought, that's something that I'd really like to do. Thankfully made it possible.
Yeah, turns out it worked out. Now you talked about your fund going from £30 million to £2 billion. How does that happen? Like, does it start with, like, you make a couple of really good investments and then people start to take notice and then you get other investors on board? Or, like, how does your assets under management grow to that level? What is it, just, the right relationships or?
Yeah, look, I think, just to put it out there, we're very boring as a firm. So, we invest in index funds. We are not stock picking, pick NVIDIA. I wish I'd have got that one right. That would have been pretty cool. But, I'm not going to sit saying that we do that. So our advice is pretty generic and pretty boring. But what we are is a safe, steady set of hands. And ultimately, we try and do things properly. And we also do what we say we're going to do, which I think a lot of companies don't, getting the basics right. So, we were fortunate enough that we were in a market that, had a quite a big upwards trajectory between 2018 to 2022. So we caught, sure, a nice bull run up, even with COVID. We were able to accumulate a lot of assets and great clients during that time, who put their trust in us because we were doing a good job and we were doing what we say we were going to do. Advisors join, you kind of get this snowball effect. We was really fortunate with the quality of advisors that joined us and have stayed with us for that period. You don't get to 2 billion in 6 years by hiring a load of people and losing a load of people. You have to be good at retaining people and keeping them.
Yeah, we're definitely going to dive into that. I'm just interested. So 2018, you're right. Like, you're kind of catching kind of the upswing of the market, but then COVID hits, right? In 2020, and no one knew that what ended up happening was going to be ending up what happened. So when that first hit, like, what was your like initial inclination? You have this company that's 2 years old and you're hitting this black swan event globally that is not like anything we've ever seen. Did you know right away that it was going to be something beneficial, or was it something that there was a big concern for you until it actually turned out to be okay?
I think if I was saying that it was going to, I thought it would all be okay, is, you know, is a big fat lie. Like most people, I was thinking, crap, like, what are we going to do, and making contingency plans. But thankfully, we were able to keep everyone that worked with us. We made sure that they all got paid, you know, everything that they were owed during that time. And we made sure that we had, we did a lot of different things. So one of the things that we did as a business before was we looked after our clients remotely. So we got clients all over the globe, Australia, US, Europe, UK, Middle East. So we were doing a lot of this style conversation before it was the norm. So when that happened, we were already kind of geared up to look after our clients in that way. And then obviously the whole world adapted, Zoom, Teams, everything else just, you know, propelled at such a rapid rate that was the way that, you know, we were able to do it. So actually we did better in 2020 than we did in 2019. And we did much better in 2021 than we did in 20, because that was just the environment that we were in, and we were able to, you know, we were already used to it. So it didn't take as much time to get used to it. And we also used to do cool things with the staff. So we'd have 3 meetings a day. We'd have one in the morning, one in lunchtime, one in the evening, just to check in, make sure everyone's all right. We used to put on like weekly quizzes for their staff and their families, you know. So it was kind of, it was, although we were far apart, it was actually probably the closest we'd had been together. So that camaraderie, I think, got a lot of people through, and a lot of businesses through in general, not just ours, but people pitching in and working together.
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting case study to look back at, like, when that happened, what was going through everybody's heads. To your point, like, we were doing a bunch from a contingency planning perspective, and we put all these plans together, and then it turned out that everything was not just okay. It actually ended up turning out being really well, and business not only kept moving, yeah, but it grew in a lot of respects. And so we did a lot of those same things as a company. It was very important to kind of try to keep your culture moving. It was one of the most important times of being able to show your employees that you care about them as a whole person more than just what they're doing for your firm. So it sounds like you had a lot of success with that. So that's, I give you a lot of kudos on that. You know, when we talk about entrepreneurs, though, you and I both know that people talk, it's always like an overnight success, right? You know, we always see the end result, and we play that and say, oh man, overnight they made that happen. But you and I both know that when you start a company, you're going through all different types of trials and tribulations. And even some of the biggest entrepreneurs the world's known, like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg, there's been times where they were questioning their fitness to do this or the decision they made. So I'm just interested, any obstacles, challenges? COVID obviously plays a part, but anything else that kind of you went through as you're going through this process, so people don't realize that Hoxton was just this overnight success, but you had to go through some trials and tribulations?
Yeah, definitely. I think, look, like any business, we've been through really good times, and, you know, we've been through difficult times. So, you know, one of the things, so we operate in a heavily regulated environment across multiple jurisdictions. And one of the companies that operate and do what we do internationally were not being very good with their clients, and ultimately found out to be a fraudulent operation. So, you know, to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars. We're not talking about, you know, just a few thousand pounds. So therefore, there was a lot of regulatory scrutiny on the whole international market that we operate in by the regulators, and quite rightly so. They want to make sure that all of the clients that they're meant to be looking after are looked after. So, you know, we had 4 regulators in checking out our businesses in different jurisdictions at the same time, which was, you know, very stressful, because, you know, you worry, and we didn't know that this was happening to this other company at the time. And obviously afterwards you can look back and go, oh yeah, you know, that kind of makes sense now. But that was tough. Thankfully we got the all clear green boxes ticked, and it made our businesses stronger. We were able to operate areas perhaps that we needed to bolster as a result of it. So we took a lot of positives from it. Cash flow is with any business. You're growing rapidly as well. We've had to manage that. We've had to invest. You know, we've not taken a penny out of the business since we started. It's all been reinvesting, 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 reinvesting to make the business better. That's been tough as well. You know, that kind of is what it is. But like you said, a lot of people think overnight success, but far, far, far from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good point. And like, you know, go through a lot of mud as an entrepreneur to get to the point where you're actually at the financial place you want to be. You're at the organizational place you want to be. I know myself, even maybe to my detriment sometimes, I've reinvested back into the company just because I believe so deeply in the upside and the ways that we're innovating. But that means that you're probably not doing everything you need to do to take care of your family. And sometimes that can be really misleading because you have like this great company and then everybody just kind of assumes certain things. But, you know, depending on what your strategy is, right, you got to be, you know, sometimes it might not be as financially lucrative, especially initially, as you want it to be longer term. And that's, I think, something a lot of entrepreneurs go through is, well, how much do I reinvest and how much do I pull off the table? One of the things that I've gotten a lot of great advice on is, you know, understanding about, you know, pulling chips off the table or building a little bit of a moat up around yourself. You know, 13, 14 years in, I'm still learning these types of things on what's best. But I've also been very bullish on who we are. And I think a lot of these investments we've made, including our software, are some of the reasons that we're going to be the company we're going to be as we go forward. So I don't think a lot of people fully understand kind of the heartache, the stress, the sleepless nights, the questioning of your fitness for this that comes up when they see the success. So I want to give you a lot of kudos for that and credit for that and for all the other entrepreneurs, because it's like I've said before, it's not about the heart or the mind a lot of the time. It's about the stomach. Can you deal with the ups and downs that comes with this world? It's not for everybody. So I want to talk to you about your success being, because when I asked you about it, you, like I said, can you describe it to me in a word? You said consistency. And I'm just interested. That's such an interesting word. I totally agree with you, but I'm just interested. Has that always been part of your makeup, or is that a quality that over time as you matured, consistency became a big thing for you? And why do you think that's such an important professional quality in just in yourself, but also as a business and as a company?
Look, consistency, success to me, as I said to you before, is consistency. It's turning up day in, day out when you don't want to, when it's hard, when it's tough, and moving things forward. And there's so many people that fall at the first or the second or the third or the fourth obstacle and never fulfill their full potential. You know, unfortunately for myself, I'm not particularly bright. You know, I'm you know, clearly I'm not unintelligent, but, you know, am I a rocket scientist? No. Am I insanely gifted naturally? No. But what I am is really hardworking, and I can work hard for long periods of time. You know, 6-7 days a week, as I'm sure is the same true with you. And, you know, I think you need that, especially when you're starting something, because a journey is over a set, you know, you can talk about finite or an infinite journey, and it depends what you're on. But really, to get to certain milestones that you want to get to, it will take time. Now, that time can be less if you work harder over that shorter period of time, or it can be more stretched out if that's more what you're interested in. And for me, consistency means that, you know, that keeps getting shorter and shorter and shorter. If you can be consistently great, if you can be consistently on it all the time, then, you know, you'll get to your destination a lot quicker. And, you know, that's what I mean. To be truly successful, you have to turn up consistently all day, every day, to make sure that you're pushing things forward. And so many people miss that. They think you can be good for a couple of weeks and then have a couple of weeks off, and then be good for a couple of weeks and then have a couple of weeks off. You will never fulfill your potential by doing that.
Yeah, I think there's some symbolism here, and you tell me if I'm wrong, about investing in index funds, and that you said are boring, right? But there's not a lot of volatility like you see with some of the other stocks out there. It's like a consistent day in and day out belief, long-term show up, right? And then eventually you get these massive returns. Is that a fair allegory there in terms of your business and how you
show up? I think over a long period of time, indexed investing, you will see it be a lot smoother than if you invest in one individual stock or share. You know, I wholeheartedly agree with that. Yeah.
I see that with a lot of individuals too. Like, they'll do something great and then they'll tank for like a week or two after that. And it's like, I don't know. I don't want to be in relationships like that. I don't want to work with somebody like that. I'd rather you just be kind of on this steady incline. And I know what I'm getting and you know what you're getting in me. From a consistency perspective, I think that's a really important professional quality. And I think it matters to customers too, because ultimately, when they're buying services from you, when they're working with you, they want to know, like, nobody wants to deal with uncertainty. Nobody wants to know what they're, you know, they're going to be getting something different on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, whether it becomes with individuals, the way that you invest, or your organization overall. That reliability is really, really important. You only get that through consistently showing up day in and day out. You grew up in the UK, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Did you grow up like in glamorous London, or did you grow up in like a smaller town, or where'd you grow up?
My family are from North London, which is just outside of the centre of London, and then we kind of moved to suburbia, which is around London. There's a ring road called the M25 that runs all the way around London. So we was within the M25, but we weren't in central London. So I grew up in a place called Watford, which is not a glamorous place at all, and it's a place that you would typically just drive through to get or pass through on a train to get into central London. But yeah, that was home.
So are you a big Watford club fan?
No, I'm an Arsenal fan.
Oh.
So we had a pretty good season last year. We just missed out on winning the Premier League, but hopefully next season will be different.
So I'm a big Liverpool fan. Been to Anfield. I was very upset with how the season ended. I thought we had a real chance going in there. Arsenal, a couple second place finishes in a row. That's that North London derby between. Do you just despise Tottenham, or you kind of?
I think I don't despise Tottenham. I think they despise us a lot more. I think they get a lot happier when we don't win, but that probably just shows the quality of individual that support Tottenham.
Oh, look at that. See, and listen, getting to know the EPL and getting to know the different rivalries and things like that, I was pulling for you guys. I am so tired of the Manchester City machine and just what they're doing. And who knows? Maybe some of these will be, some of these championships will be put to the wayside because of some financial fair play rules, and then I'll get a couple more titles and you'll get a couple more titles, and then we'll be better off. We'll see.
Let's hope so.
So listen, you've talked about you living in London, but you recently moved to Dubai, and so I gotta be honest, I'm very fascinated by this city. I spent a little bit of time there. I was there for an overnight. I went to the Burj Khalifa. I did all the kind of regular touristy things, but you have your family there. You have three young kids from what I understand. What's it like moving there? And can you tell us what it's like to work there? And then I want to know what it's like living there. Like, just, and was there anything that spurred this decision too?
So I moved to the Middle East 13 years ago. So I moved to Abu Dhabi, which is actually the capital of the United Arab Emirates, which is where Dubai is. So Abu Dhabi's more where there's a lot of oil wealth there, whereas Dubai is more tourism and, you know, the glitz and the glamour that we know now. In COVID, I decided to move up to Dubai. All my children were born in Abu Dhabi, so their birthplace is Abu Dhabi. This is their home. Effectively, they've known nothing different. Although they do go back, they do understand where their roots are. But look, the Middle East is a fantastically safe place. It's full of endless opportunity for those people that want to explore it. It's obviously tax free. You can get anywhere really easily from here. 9 months of the year, the weather's absolutely insane and amazing. Every weekend is like being on holiday. Now, I was just talking to someone earlier, and you know, he's recently moved over here, and you know, he was outside the Burj Khalifa on the beach on Saturday at a beach club, dinner that night, off playing paddle on a Sunday morning, and then back into Heston Blumenthal's restaurant in Atlantis for Sunday lunch. That's a normal weekend, you know, and there's not many places in the world that you can do that, which is pretty cool. And like I said before, it's tax-free. I mean, that's...
I got to dive into that a little bit. I'm not sure I fully understood that. So I got some questions. So how do they pay for the infrastructure of the city?
Well, unfortunately for you being American, it's probably not tax-free because, you know, you get worldwide tax by the IRS. But the infrastructure is typically paid from the oil wealth that they've accumulated. And also there is a value added tax, but it's only 5%. And then, you know, the government owns a lot of the touristy things. So, you know, they own, I know, Emirates Airlines, they own the Jumeirah Beach Hotels, countless properties. You know, there's a lot of money that's generated from those assets. They've also got, you know, Abu Dhabi have got the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority, which is their sovereign wealth fund, which is, you know, where they reinvest their oil wealth. So there's a lot of other ways that they will earn, but it's, you know, it's a unique proposition at the moment.
Yeah, I got to talk to my CFO. Maybe we should be opening up in Dubai because well, we talk about tax and tax implications here, like way too much from my perspective. And my biggest thing on taxes is, you know, ultimately, I don't feel like it's being spent in a way that, well, let's put it this way. If the U.S. government was a private company, they would have been, you know, bankrupt like 1,000 times over at this point, because there's just not a lot of checks and balances on how that money is spent and transparency on it. And so when that happens, you know, obviously you're going to have some issues. So God, love the U.S., love many, many parts of the country that I live in and was born in. But my God, taxation is something that sounds really appealing. I'm not going to lie to you that you have that in Dubai. So let's jump into the hiring, Chris, because I'm interested. I want to talk a little bit about some of your philosophy in terms of the people you brought into your organization. It's obviously that you have a very employee-centric point of view. Let's start here. When you're hiring people for Hoxton, do you have a core philosophy that you adhere to when bringing somebody into your organization?
Yes, in terms of the hiring process?
Yeah, just in terms of like, well, what are the type of people that like you think fit best for your organization?
Yeah, so look, we are quite a young organization. I'm 37. The average age of our advisors is 37. The average age of our pathway advisors is 29. senior management team, probably around the 40 years old. So relatively young in terms of quite a lot of businesses that manage funds. So we're young and dynamic. The other thing that we, take into account is we don't like ego. Now, in investment businesses, there can typically be a lot of egos around. That's not something that we're interested in at all. We want to work with people that are humble, that, you know, get on with things. And also, we want to work with people that have good character, that you know, ultimately want to do well and want to do the right thing. We won't employ people that are in it for a fast buck. We want people that want to be financial advisors for the longer run. We don't want to be, hiring people that want to be here today, make a quick buck, and then, you know, bugger off tomorrow.
Yeah, which I imagine in your industry, there's a lot more of that than the opposite, I assume.
There is a lot more of that. But I think, you know, ultimately the industry, especially in the international space, is shifting a lot now. So you're getting a lot more people with a lot more qualifications, a lot more people taking care of their personal development, a lot more people wanting to build it out as a career. It's a really interesting space and dynamic space that is changing a lot to work in and to operate in.
Wow. So what about if I ask you about a memorable interview experience, either maybe it was prior to you starting the company and you were interviewing, or maybe somebody that you interviewed for the company, anything come to mind?
Yeah, I remember when I was thinking about this earlier, one of my memorable interviews was actually when I was at KPMG. I had to give a presentation on Sunseeker. They didn't choose it. I don't know why I chose a yacht company, but I had to give a presentation on a business, on where it is now and what we would do to improve it. You know, it was very high level, was not too much detail, but I always remember that as something, but it was pretty cool because it gave you a chance to delve in, to show your skills, to show that you're thinking outside the box a little bit, presentation, you know, and I've actually used that now for people where we're hiring in senior positions, which is prepare a presentation on what you think you can do with X, Y, and Z, or we give them a problem to solve. And, you know, that really stuck out to me.
Yeah, I love that. I do think that's a really good part of the interview process in terms of being able to apply the skills that they have and getting to see that. I think that's something that if you can pull it off and if you do it in the right way, that can be really, really compelling in terms of understanding what that person is going to do once they get to your company. Do you remember what your recommendations were and maybe why it stood out in terms of what you would have done with that company?
Yeah, my recommendations were that I thought that they should be a bit wider in terms of their product. They were quite narrow at the time in terms of the amount of yachts and what they've made them for. So that was one of my key takeaways.
Love it. Love it. All right. What about favorite question? Do you have a favorite question you like to ask in interviews?
Yeah. I mean, I've probably got two, really. I suppose, you know, and I suppose they kind of tie into each other. So the first question I always ask is, when we ask your references, what will they likely tell me about you? And I think because I say when I ask, that will mean that that I'll get an honest answer. And the second thing is, you know, why are you leaving the business that you're in? And what I'm really looking out for there is if they're going to start slagging off their old company and, you know, start, you know, telling me every reason why it was bad. What I'm really looking for is that, you know, for them not to be doing that. That's a huge no-no for me if they start going to town on a person in their business or their old business or, you know, or the old company itself.
Sure. I'm going to flip it around on you. So if I was asking your references on what's it like to work with Chris, what would they tell me?
Hopefully a joy.
I love that. Yeah. For me, I think reliable, willing to like solve problems, right? And good relationship builder. I would hope that they say that, but we'll see. We'll have to check my references and see if they follow up on that. So it sounds like you do a lot of virtual interviewing. How do you create a candidate experience that is able to be done through video? How do you make people feel good and understand what they're walking into at Hoxton?
Yeah, look, it is tough and something we're working on to improve all the time. You know, we've recently recruited a chap into our business called Sam. He runs a really successful podcast called The Financial Planner Life. And we've recruited him in to help us, you know, build out our brand and build out the recognition within our business. So people feel like there's a lot of content already out there and there's a lot of information already out there. So they feel like they know you before you jump on. I mean, I'm sure lots of your listeners, when they talk to you, it's almost like a bit of celebrity because they've seen you, they've listened to all the podcasts you've done. They've, you know, you've built up that experience, which is really cool. And it's all the content that you're putting out there that no doubt makes you, you know, extremely successful or part of the reason why you're extremely successful too. So trying to emulate things like that you're doing and others are doing is one thing that we're trying to do better. A second thing for us is having a real clear process in terms of what we're going to do. So they'll have a screening interview. They'll be asked, you know, they'll go through some tests. We'll ask them some questions on, you know, the initial part is that they have to, you know, they have the right answers to. And, you know, then they're in for the senior manager. Then they get their reference checks. Then they're in for their final interview. So there's a real clear process that we're trying to put them through. And we make sure that they're fully aware of that at the start. So they're not, you know, they're not walking into something that they don't understand or don't know.
You know, it's funny. Celebrity might be a bridge too far, but I would say that since doing this podcast and putting my views out there on social, one of the things that becomes an imperative is this understanding of your authenticity and being consistent, right? So many times I listen to podcasts and I'll hear people, you know, one week say something this way and then they'll say something very counter the next week and you never get a really good feel for them. And the one thing that's really important to me is, you know, as I've had people interview with me or I've had customers want to work together, that I'm validating what they're hearing online, right? In person as well. And then I'm showing up on that day after day after day. And it goes back to that consistency that we were talking about. But it's a really important thing to uphold because the last thing I would want is like this persona to be really disconnected from who I really am. And so really, really important to build in that authenticity to that because you have a lot more out there now. And there's a lot more you can get called out on and a lot more that people can find out about you too. And so I try to think about that a lot because I can only be myself. And so that's usually my default on that. But at the same time, like being consistent and being somebody that, you know, I know that people who are going to want to come work here are going to listen to this. I want to be talking about the things that I truly believe. So if they come work here, it's not like some snake oil sales or something like that, right? So it's something to think about and something to keep in mind. If you're doing that with your pod too, just make sure you keep that authenticity because last thing you want is somebody buying something and then they get something completely different. You don't strike me as that type of guy at all, though.
Definitely. Thank you.
All right, let's talk a little bit about when you miss. All right, let's say, because there's got to be people that you've hired that didn't work out. Is there a theme you look back on when that happens? Or is there a bias maybe that comes up for you that you're trying to get rid of?
It was quick hiring decisions and we weren't looking at references. So we weren't taking reference checking seriously enough. And also we were making quick hip shot hiring decisions, not putting them through a proper formal process. We have a lot less churn in our business now, because the quality of people we hire is much, much higher. And we say no to a lot more than we do say yes. We don't give people a go anymore. If they're not 100% right, we don't recruit them. And I learned that book from a book called Who.
We were struggling with recruitment. I'm sure you've got it.
Yeah, I got it back there somewhere. It's a good book.
Great book. And, you know, really, really taught me a lot about hiring and about what I should be looking at and what I shouldn't be looking at. And, you know, if you've got any others that you would suggest I read, then I'm all ears on that too.
Yeah, I'd recommend Hire With Your Head. It's another very good, just like the Who methodology, super tactical, but gives you a lot of really good things to think about. Quite frankly, our software has combined 13, 14 years of doing this, working with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of companies, tens of thousands of hires, what we've learned to be optimal. Then we looked a lot at like the Google and the Amazon processes and what stands out about them. And then we looked into the Who methodology and the Hire With Your Head methodology. And when you take all of these together in aggregate, there's really an optimal way to do this, right? That's a standard that most companies should try to adhere to. So now when we're giving our services, we're bringing in that expertise and that advisement more so than even bringing people to the table, although that's obviously a big byproduct of what we do, but also in our software, because what we're trying to do is make it so that it's standard and you can build that into your technologies, because we can take that to scale. We used to do a lot of training of hiring managers at clients, right? Whether we had a full outsourcing opportunity or even just working with them on a one-off, we would have to be like, hey, that's not best practice there. Or, hey, you shouldn't have 12 interviews. Or, hey, this is how you give feedback. Or this is how you drive requirements on a position. And so that's been gleaned from a lot of different places in terms of our kind of like how we optimally hire and how we built this methodology that's become really our secret sauce to why we've had success. And that's why we're building it into the software. So highly recommend Hire With Your Head. The Who methodology is really good. There's some things in all pieces that we took to put together kind of what we do. So I think that would be my recommendation for you. Speaking of that, technology wise, like, are you pen and paper? Like when you're interviewing somebody, or how are you taking notes? Like, I'm trying to understand how. What's the experience like for you in terms of how you capture feedback or evaluate the interviewee?
Yeah, so look, I think look, things like Read AI and other note-taking tools that you've got now are pretty cool. We record most of the interviews as well. And then obviously taking notes as we're going through. I just keep my note taker open and refer back to them. And then obviously we store them. We have a CRM that we use in-house, very basic, but just to record the details so we don't miss anything. So yeah.
Love that. Love that. All right, I want to take it in a little bit of a different direction. So let me ask you about what you're working on right now that you're really, really excited about. It's getting you up out of the morning. Yeah. You're pumped.
Yeah, look, so we've got four things that we're really focusing on at the moment. So number one is continuing with our organic growth. That's super important to us. We built our business off being all organically, you know, driven and growing. So that's what we're focused on. We've got our Hoxton app, which is a leading wealth tech piece that we've built from scratch, which is by us, which is really cool. Inorganic growth, so we're buying businesses and integrating them into Hoxton, and then we've got our own fund range that we're working on too. So there's four things every day that I get up and I think, how can I push these forward? What can I do? So I'm super lucky to have so much that we're able to focus on.
I love that. What about, have you read a good book recently that you want to recommend, or any good content you've seen on TV maybe that you'd recommend?
Yeah, like I think one of the books that I really like and I normally recommend is Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink.
Jocko, love Jocko.
Yeah, so yeah, Navy SEAL, really cool guy. You know, it is a bit American sometimes for us Brits, but I think, you know, all of the concepts that he talks about in that book are super useful. You know, like, the problems are down to you when you start blaming other people. Then, you know, you really are the problem normally. So it's, you know, all about looking at your inner self, reflecting, what can I do better? How can I have a more positive influence on the situation? You know, and being more strategic. So I love his stuff.
Yeah. So if you like those types of books, I don't know if you've read David Goggins' Can't Hurt Me. That would be a book that you like. You've read that?
Yeah. Really good book.
Really good book. I always think about what can I control? What's in my control? It's usually me, my reaction, my responses to different things, my mental toughness, my mental will. That's something that has really been baked into my head over the last 10 to 15 years. And I think that's led to a lot of success, because when you have that non-victim mentality, you have that accountability, even when you didn't have control in some scenarios, there's always something that you can look back on and reflect on that you can do differently. And I think both of those books do a great, great job of kind of outlining that. So Chris, last one. If you had some advice that you were going to give your 20-year-old self that you didn't know then, but that you know now, or maybe just for our early in career listeners, what would you say?
Don't give up. You know, keep on working. The consistency point that we were talking about earlier, you know, consistency will lead to success. Don't give up. Don't get disheartened. It's all part of the process. Everything will normally work out right. I know that's a lot of success. And that's a lot of answers to your question, but it's, you know, really stems around that consistency point.
I genuinely believe this. I think one of the differences between successful entrepreneurs and not is just staying in the fight. Like, you're going to deal with ups and downs. You're going to get punched in the mouth. And is it a knockout punch, or is it one that you can get back up on? So like, as long as you can continue to stay in and show up over a long enough timeline, you're going to have success. It's just, sometimes that's really hard especially when you take a big hit. So I could not agree with you more. I'm interested because you said one thing. I just want to ask one more question. Generalization, of course. What do you think are the differences in like the British professional workforce versus the American professional workforce?
I think the Americans are probably a bit more. I think the Americans, what I've noticed, are very much more invested in themselves. And by that, I mean they're happy to, you know, go on a workshop to better themselves. It's all about, you know, investing, building yourself up. Whereas the Brits are sometimes a bit more steady in their approach and outlook. So I'd say probably the best way to sum it up is I'd say Americans are bigger risk takers and Brits are more steady.
Love it. That is awesome. So many great insights, Chris. I really appreciate you joining us. This is going to be an awesome episode. Can't wait for everybody to hear it. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate you.
Me too.
All right, brother. Thank you very much. Talk to you.